Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 19, delivered on November 1, 2016. The title of this lecture is Risk and Return.
Today, Risk and Return. The basic principle applies. And remember this one for your next exam or for the final. The greater the risk, the greater the expected return. The greater the risk that you bear, the greater the return you should expect. However, it is not just risk that matters. It is a specific kind of risk. It is non-diversifiable risk. So there are two types of risk that we can look at. Risk has two pieces to it. There is the non-systematic risk. This is also called diversifiable risk. This is risk that you can get rid of if you just diversify your portfolio. You should not expect to get a return for it. You're taking risk for no reason, and you can get punished badly for bearing this risk. You buy a stock, that stock may have a nice low beta, might be a safe stock in a portfolio, but when it's on its own, it goes rogue on you. This kind of non-systematic risk is just dominates most stocks. In fact, stocks that are big, huge companies. And I was actually a little surprised when I started looking at the amount of risk in stocks like Microsoft, Apple, Google, that was diversifiable. It was more than 50% of the risk was risk that you shouldn't be taking on. You won't get a reward for it. You're just stupid to have it. Now, the other kind of risk is systematic risk. This is non-diversifiable risk. This is the kind of risk that you can't get rid of. This is the risk that remains even in a diversified portfolio. You cannot diversify it away. You cannot make it go away. This is the risk that you should look for. And again, it's actually not the risk that is the biggest part of most risk profiles of stocks, typically. I kind of would be curious, if I had the time, to find out what kinds of stocks actually do have their total risks dominated by this non-systematic. Is there some kind of pattern of some type of stock or something that has low non-diversifiable risk? Doesn't look like it from a cursory examination. Let me show you something here. I'm going to take,
I can't go any further than that, can I? Well, heck. '06 is as far back as I can go. '06-01-01. Well, that sucks. Huh. Looks like I can't pull that one. Oh, well. It was worth a try anyway. Let's look at a 10-year. Let me do the max. There, that'll do it. Okay, there is the growth rate of the Standard & Poor's 500. Nothing spectacular about that. Other than the fact that if you hold it for a long period of time, it will grow on you. You notice that if you lose your cool at the when stocks start to fall, you sell off, you get creamed. But if you just hold on, you will notice, by the way, this is covers the period of the Great Recession of 08 to 09. Notice that if you had just held on, not sold out, you would have done okay. You would have recovered by 2013, you would have been okay. You would have recovered, and you would have done nicely with the Standard & Poor's 500 since then. But, I mean, if you could have taken a, if you had sold out at the top here or panicked as the recession began, you would have really taken a bath. So it's a something of a good idea not to do that too often. Now, let me pull something up here. I'm going to see if I can get on a couple of charts together. Stock index. Well, that didn't work too well. Standard & Poor's 500 indexes. Let me see if I can find some indexes here. It looks like I'm not going to do too well on using the Federal Reserve to do this. I thought I could actually pull a couple off here. Let me back up here. I do want to show you a couple, at least, at the very least. Search for popular series. NASDAQ. Okay. The NASDAQ Composite Index at the max. Oh, that one's an old one. They've got data way back on this. Notice that, again, if you hold for a long period of time and you don't panic, you'll have yourself a nice profile of growth. That's the buy and hold that I've been talking about for a long, long time. But if you panic and you say, well, what I'll do is I'll sell out here at the high and then I'll buy back in at the low. See, I'm a smart investor. Well, no, you're not. You're looking at historical data. You wouldn't have known when that high was going to happen. How would you have known that was a high, that was a peak of the market? Well, you would have known that when it had already crashed. Oh, I guess that was a high back there. That's one of the problems with looking at these charts. Well, I could figure this out. I could sell out up here at this peak and then buy back in here at this trough. See, I know how to do this. And then let it ride, and then I'll sell out at this peak and then buy back in at this trough. No, you wouldn't, because you wouldn't have known that in advance that that was going to happen. You would have been up here, and you would have seen this drop down here, and you would have thought, oh, boy, I guess it rose again. And by the time you got to the point where you had your act together and you sold out, you would have sold out near the trough, and you would have lost pretty much all of your gains for years by selling out in here. But if you had just simply held on, let it drop, rise, drop, rise, from back here to up here, you would have made a darn good penny. You would have had enough for a decent retirement if you had just kept pushing in money and dollar averaging. Remember I told you about that dollar average in? You just keep spending the same absolute amount of money to invest in stocks so that when the stocks were at their peak, you wouldn't have been buying many stocks. But during this trough here, if you're just still buying in, you're buying in at low prices, you're building a massive portfolio. And every time the stock market drops, if you just keep investing smartly, diversify your portfolio, keep it diverse, you would have had a lot of money by the time you get to this point right here. As I told you, in your lifetimes, it looks like that growth rate that we had over my lifetime isn't going to be there. It's not the stock market over a long period of time will grow, but it will not grow as aggressively as it did in previous eras. So we're in a new age, and you are in a new age too. However, the rule still applies. Buy and hold. The greater the risk, the greater the expected return, but the only risk for which you get a reward is non-diversifiable risk, not for all of the risk that you bear. I'm going to try one last thing here. Because I'm not getting what I want here. What I wanted to do was link a group of them together. Stock market indexes. Dow Jones. Okay. If I could put these together, let me start with a few things. S&P 500, it's a large cluster of big, big companies. It's probably, if you're looking for a market portfolio, that would be about as close as you could get. Buying the Standard & Poor's 500, either as a mutual fund or as an ETF, electronically tradable fund, that would be a market portfolio. Your earnings would be approximately the earnings of the market itself. Leveraging in, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, those are the monster, massive companies. They are safer, therefore, their return, you should expect it to be lower. But it's going to be the risk is lower. And by the way, well, let me point out something. Generally speaking, indexes like this Dow Jones Industrial Average, those companies in it now, in the 30 industrial, the Dow 30, those are not the same companies that were there like 20 years ago or 10 years ago. What they do is they move companies out that are in old or antiquated industries, and they move companies in that are more modern. So the Dow now would have more high-tech companies than it did 20 years ago when it was almost all just straight-up industrial monsters. But it is still huge companies. Companies that probably won't go belly up ever, but they are lower expected return because they of their lower non-diversifiable risk. Wilshire 5000. Now, if it's like Wilshire is a little different. It's a lot of companies. But the interesting thing about it is most indexes, when we look at indexes, they weight the portfolio components by their contribution to the size of the total market cap of the portfolio. So in other words, in a typical portfolio that you would see one of these indexes, a Google would have a much larger position than would say a company like Dell, which doesn't have nearly as large a market cap. So it's a weighted average. Now the Wilshires aren't weighted. I believe the Wilshires, if I'm not mistaken, they are just straight up, each one is the same number of shares of stock in the index. NASDAQ, the NASDAQ component composite index, is small stocks, most of them, although there are some enormous companies in the NASD series. But the NASDAQ is just a huge number of companies. Most of them small cap, and that means higher risk, higher diversifiable, higher total risk, higher non-diversifiable risk. So this would be an index of risky stocks. So you would expect a higher a return on that. The Russells are another series, and I believe they are arithmetic instead of weighted average as well. Wilshire's. And there you have some Wilshires, NASDAQ 100, that's the big companies. Composites, these are more specialty kinds, like transportation, utilities, and stuff like that. Going the Wilshire microcap, those would be very risky. Well, let me, just out of curiosity, let me see this guy. Oh, hey, max on that one. So from an index of just a little over 1,000, look at that son of a bitch, or that thing. Sorry. I mean, look at that. Do you see that return on that thing? But keep in mind, that is a roller coaster. You should have very strong nerves to put up with something like that. That one is a whipsaw of an index.
it magnifies anything that is a mild panic, a mild annoyance to the S&P 500 is a full-blown stampede in something like this. Like I said, I really wish I could link these together, but I used to be able to, but I just can't figure out how you do it anymore. But by the way, if you're looking for how to make a report, taking these, and then you could either simply print the graph as a JPEG, save the graph as a JPEG, or you can download and put it into Excel and play with it that way. But this is a really a nice way to do this stuff. Now, let me pull back here. Russell's. Okay, now you'll notice Wilshire and Russell. See how many more of them are down here in lower in this chart? They are actually important indices, but they are not the ones most people think of when they think of stock market index. They would think of something like the Dow Jones 30, which is actually not very, you could be in a pretty serious recession and the Dow is just going to sit there, it doesn't respond to things. But if you're looking for something that would be more how the market as a whole behaves, then you want to go up here to the S&P 500. I'm just curious. I wish I could chart these out together. But there you go. I can't chart them together. I used to be able to do this, and I haven't used this in a long time because I just don't trust their information anymore. I point out to you. Interesting that let me pull back here real quick. Dow. If I could show these on the same chart, you would see it a lot better. But do you see how the Dow just sort of floats along? Do you see that float on it? It had a couple of butt beatings. But at the same time, you see how gentle the drop is and how gradually it floats upward and you don't get spectacular. See how the returns are not that spectacular from year to year on it? That's a safe portfolio. The Dow is just drifts along very comfortably. If you are a low-risk investor, find a portfolio that mimics the Dow Jones Industrial 30. It's going to always be there. You're not going to get creamed badly. Let me see something here. I don't get it. Why they don't show Fred? See, these indices go back a lot farther than this, but for some reason, the Federal Reserve doesn't show you how far back they actually can go. Here's the upshot of it. Return. Now the return is selling price over buying price. To the 1 over the number of years, minus 1, and then times it by 100%. Now, you would also want to take into account dividends. Most of the stock mutual funds that you would invest in, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, when a dividend is paid on a stock, it is simply rolled back into your investment, into your portfolio. So essentially, there's a magnification factor that goes on in a mutual fund. If you've got a portfolio that pays dividends, well, all that's going to happen is those dividends are just going to be folded back in, reinvested to expand your holding on the portfolio, increase your return. So in other words, the dividend yield is folded into the capital gain on the mutual fund.
If you're an individual investor, then when the dividend check comes to you, which it will, you would have to decide what you're going to do with that dividend check. Are you going to go out to Cracker Barrel and have a nice dinner? I recommend the meatloaf. It is excellent, outstanding. Or are you going to immediately buy back into that stock? Problem is that you probably couldn't do that on your own, because like if you've got a portfolio, say $12,000, and each of the stocks in there is like $80, $90 stocks, your dividend check is going to be so small, you couldn't even buy one share of stock. Maybe you could buy five or six, but you can't buy a round lot. So it's not a very good idea to try to fold the dividends back in on your own, unless you just let them accumulate for a while in your stockbroker's mutual money market fund that you've got with them, and then when you've got enough money, buy back in. That's why it's probably, again, and I can't emphasize this enough, if you are a long-haul investor and you don't want to, you don't have that alpha sense that I've got to control everything about my portfolio, it's probably better for you to do mutual funds or maybe even ETFs, because they'll take care of folding the dividends back in so that essentially everything that happens to you is a capital gain over time. But that's your return, okay? Over a large number of years. So in other words, if I can read this fairly well, let me take, that's 2007, right? October the 31st of 1280.73. And this is the Dow, right? Yeah. 1280.73. Now let's take it over here exactly. Is that 10 years later? Is that 10?
Yeah.
I always hate that. That 1 year, 18-142-42. Okay, now. And I am assuming that, well, no, I'm not assuming. I know it. With these indexes, they just fold the dividend back in and it adds to the portfolio's growth. So there's no dividend yield. If you've got a normal calculation, you remember I showed you, you'd have your capital gain plus your dividend yield. That's your total yield. With these indexes, because they are folding the dividends back in, all you've got is your capital gain yield. So what I would do here is I would take 18-142-42 over 1280.73. Raise that to the 1/10 power less 1. I'm just, oh boy, that would have made for a really, wow, that would have been an awesome portfolio. 1280.73. I would have gotten really excited about that. Thank you so much for that. Wow. Okay. Calculator. Now I'm going to whack this thing out. 18142.42 divided by 12800.73, and then I'm going to raise that to the 1/10 power minus 1 equals, then times it by 100, 3.55% return annualized. That's an annualized 3.55% return on the Standard & Poor's, or on the Dow. It's not spectacular. You see what I mean? That's not awesome, but it is, it's a return. I mean, you see how this would be a real defensive investor's investment type of thing. These are big, monstrous companies that just drift through time. They aren't going to die. They're not going to go away. They're not going to grow quickly. But they are going to be survivors.
So as I, in our business, and I'd love to hear you start using these kinds of terms too, this would be a defensive portfolio. A defensive portfolio. Now the opposite is not an offensive portfolio. We would say the opposite of that would be an aggressive portfolio. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull back here, and I'm going to get the Standard & Poor's 500 and see if I can get a 10-year on that one. Yes, I can. So now we've got 1364.3. Is that right? Yeah, okay, now coming here to the last mark. 21.26.41. Now take 21.26.41 over 13.64.30, raise that to the 1/10th power minus 1, and times the result by 100%. See what comes out of that calculation. Clear. 21.26.30 divided by, let me clear that, sorry. And we'll just do it this way. 21.26.41 divided by 13.64.30, close the parentheses, raise that to the 0.1 power minus 1, 4.54%. Is that right? Yeah. About a third larger rate of return. In other words, I went from 3.5% to 4.5%, so that's about a third better. 1% over 3.5, something like that, maybe not that much. See, a little bit more aggressive. But notice something interesting. Both of these portfolios are not spectacular performers. Even the S&P 500 is a fairly defensive portfolio. Why? Because this is a pile of big-ass companies. And that's the technical term for it. They are large. They're not going to be beaten down. They're not going to die. At least most of them won't. They are, and these are the monopolistic competitors. So they will make more money, and they will have more non-diversifiable risk. But now, taking it over, I want to give... try the NASDAQ composite. 10 years out. Whoops, let me do 10 years. Okay, NASDAQ 23.30.79 on the opening. And then, man, these are not doing well right now. 51.90.10. So we'll do 51.90.10 over 23.30.79 to the 1/10th power less 1 times 100. See what that buys us. This will be a little bit more interesting. Open the parentheses, 51.90, right, yeah, 51.90.1 divided by 23.30.79, close the parentheses. Okay, raise that to the 0.1 minus 1. There we go, that's a nicer one, times the 100. 8.33%. There you go. Higher risk, higher expected return.
totally low risk, very low expected return, a little bit more risk, a little bit more expected return. These are historical. That gives you a great profile. That was what I was trying to find, was some chart that would show you this. So I thought, well, it's better to show it to you, the math of it anyway. It's not hard math. But you can see that if you really want to have a decent return, you're going to have to take some risk in the stock market. If all you want is a slow, smooth return, if you were to think about it this way, taking money, and you can do this, I'll bet I actually, did I kill my financial calculator? I sure did. But I was going to show you that you could do this yourself. If you were to take an annuity for 40 years, about your working life, maybe 40 years, if you want to retire at 60, and you were to put in, and you could do this, let's say, into an IRA, $2,500 every year for 40 years, and then you were going to say, all right, how much would I make if the future return on the Dow were this 3.55%? Then you can say, how much would I make if my return were this versus this? As a matter of fact, I'm not even going to try to mess with it. I'm going to actually do it right now. Just irritates me to no end that I actually screwed that up. Hang on here. Bear with me one quick second. I'm going to mute this. Then I'm going to come back in here. And I'm going to pull up the financial calculator, the Pearson financial calculator. Now I'm going to show you what the why. Okay, come on. Sign in. Okay. My ass, that's exactly right. There. Okay, now pulling up the financial calculator. Let me get you. Oh, I didn't mean. Don't. Anyway. Okay, so what I'm going to do while I wait for this. Good. Okay, let's say that I took 3.55%, well, reset, clear, 3.55, and I put that in as divided by 12 equals, and I put that in for the I over Y, for let's say you're going to work 45 more years. So that would be 45 times 12. So that would be the N. And we're going to put in, let's say, $200 a month. $200 a month as your payment. So compute the future value. You'd have $265,624 on retirement. Okay, now we would want to adjust that for inflation. If you took inflation at about eating at about half of that away, that's not too spectacular. Let's look at the Standard Poor's 500. Let's look at the S&P 500. What was that? That was 4.54%. 4.54%. Divided by 12 to make it monthly. Now compute your future value.
You didn't plug it in this thing.
I'm just testing your ass, okay? 4.54% divided by, thank you, because that really freaked me when I saw the same number come out. Okay, that's I over Y, right? Compute future value, $353,000. Is what you would have at the end of the story. So again, notice this isn't really a lot. I mean, you're putting in $200 of your money every month, and this is all you're going to get at the end of the story. So let's go and take the NASDAQ, 8.33%. 8.33 divided by 12 equals, and key that in, compute the future value. Oh, well, now we're beginning to talk a million, a little more than a million. But again, you're going to have to bear risk to do that. If you want a low-risk portfolio, you're going to come out with enough that you can buy cat food every day for the rest of your life as an old person. But if you want Fancy Feast, or maybe those little tin cans of tuna, the Sheba stuff that my cats favor, you're going to have to go to the NASDAQ. But if you want to really ride the wild dog, I can show you, I won't do it right now. But if you really did want to do the wild thing, you could probably pull a portfolio that delivered 15%. But you're taking a hellacious amount of risk doing that. You're going to ride a whipsaw that's going to scare you. But again, you buy and you hold. You don't lose your cool. And if you do that, there you go. But you have to control your bladder. You can't lose your cool during recessions. We're going to have a very severe recession, probably around 2018 to 2020. And it will test your will to survive. But if you are employed and you are sure that your employment is going to stand so that you have money that you can put away, recessions are a great time to invest because stock prices are low, so every dollar buys you a lot more stock during those kinds of times. So if you, and the next lecture, the one that comes on Thursday here, we start looking at how you craft a portfolio that will buy you a 15% expected return. But if you all you want to do is have a little bit of mad money for your retirement, maybe enough for a house trailer, one of those aluminum Airstream used things, go with the Dow. Go with the Standard & Poor's 500. But if you want to ride hard, now it's going to be a little bit tougher for you. Now, I really want to go back here. Okay, search. Fred, Federal Reserve. Okay, let me blow this up a little bit. I want to go back to the indexes. Wait, let me do the Russell. Russell 5,000. Russell 5,000. Let me see if I can get 10 years of data out of that one. That one began. What's that number? That's, is that 3255? 3255. And where is it there? That's actually not a very, that's not as good as the NASDAQ. I thought the Russell would be a stronger index. You see, that's only going to buy me, that's not, the factor in the parentheses there is not going to be as strong. Let me back up here. Okay. Let me back up here a little bit. Oh, that really helps. I'm looking for one that's a stronger. The Nikkei, if you want to go create Wilshire. Okay, let me try the Wilshire. Let me have a look at that one real quick here. That's 10 years. We got a 50, a 49 on it. and a 96. That's a little stronger. That'll be a little bit better than the NASDAQ. I don't think I'm going to find the ones that I usually would show you as representative, but this one's not too bad here. Okay, this one's going to buy at 49, buy in at 49, and sell out at 96.07. 49, 96.07. 49, 96.07 over 49 to the 1/10 minus 1. See what that buys us. That should buy us a little bit better. Calculator. Okay, so that would be 96.07. 7. Really. 96.07 divided by 49. Close the parentheses. Raise it to the 0.1 power. Minus 1. Now, that's not spectacular at all. The portfolios that I could craft would be more complicated than these. Really, with these indexes, I was kind of disappointed. I was kind of hoping for something a little bit stronger than that, but looks like I'm not going to find too much, unless I want to go really crazy. Also, internationally, if you want to buy severe risk, if you're looking through here, did you see any country, a stock price index of a country that would be extraordinarily high risk and therefore high expected return? Do you see any in there that look like they might be interesting? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good people. Well, ouch. Interesting. Okay. 18.15. Oh, well, that's actually a pretty darn strong return. Do you see it?
That's only 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know. But that's still, if you want to walk on the wild side, if you want to look for some that are a little less insane, very strong performers, from 92 over here to 98, boy, that's actually kind of a sucky one. Germany is bearing the brunt of all the disasters.
From 1904 to 1914.
Well, hey, you're right. What the heck? Oh, I know why, because they don't collect that data for that one. Let me see if China is in there. Oh, this would be interesting. Nope. Fed has stopped collecting the data on a number of these. Interesting. You see that one? That one ended in 14. I wonder if they're still doing China. Isn't that interesting? The Fed has stopped collecting on all of these countries. Notice China. As I had predicted, China is actually not a particularly good investment. I wrote about this back in the time when I was writing a number of articles that China was in for a very bad time. And sure enough, after this growth spurt here in the early 2000s, they've actually had a pretty sucky stock market. So the idea that you can go to other countries and make a fortune, if you want to take a chance on these, absolutely. But now, one last thing. Risk. Measures of risk. I've given you one classic measure of risk is, of course, beta. The beta of a stock measures the non-diversifiable risk of this stock relative to the market portfolio. That's the non-diversifiable. It's generally a number bigger than zero, although you can find negative betas. They're generally speaking what we call contraries. Contrarians.
In other words, they move in the opposite direction of the market portfolio. Another one that is classic is, of course, interest rates. Interest rates are the practical measure of risk. I would charge you, a very wealthy, powerful investor, a lower interest rate for a loan than I would charge this scoundrel of a man. Because it's just a matter of the risk of the portfolio, the risk of the investment. Interest rates. Another one that is a classic, that is more of an academic, is the standard deviation. You saw this in your stats class, and it's coming back. Interestingly enough, beta has standard deviation in its calculation. It's a more complex calculation, but the standard deviation is hiding in there in the beta. There is another one that is popular in business, and I used to teach it in this class, and interestingly enough, I don't know why it's not as popular, because I know in business it's still used. And you'll have to tell me if they're teaching it in stats still. The coefficient of variation, the CV. Are they still teaching you how to do that? It is so good, because it basically all it is, you take the standard deviation and you divide it by the mean. And that standardizes it, so you can look at two different stocks that have very different scales. One could be tens of dollars, the other could be hundreds of dollars. So their standard deviations alone would not be comparable. But once you divide each of them by the mean, then they are exactly comparable. CVs are used in business all the time, because what we do with them is we look at how volatile different risks of our operation are. Our business risk, our financial risk, how much of our risk is due to just the volatility of sales? How much of our risk is due to the fact that we've got a lot of fixed investments? How much of our risk is due to the fact that we've got a lot of financing that goes through loans? So CVs are actually very big in the business world, and I use them all the time, and I still do when I analyze businesses to the extent that I can. And I'm going to put one here, one last measure of risk. Volatility. I mean, standard deviation, coefficient of variation, those are volatility. However, in the world of investors, high-powered investors, they are constantly talking about this term volatility. And they don't mean it in a technical metric sense like we do. When they talk about volatility, they're talking about more of a gut sense, a feeling of what the stock price or the price of the security is doing visually and physically, gyrating up and down and up and down. You'll hear these high-powered investors constantly talking about how important volatility is to their investment strategies. They want nothing but volatility. They love volatility. They would mock me and laugh at me if they saw that I was teaching beta. They say, who cares about beta? Interest rates, that's for little people. Standard deviations, oh, you're one of those math geeks. And CVs, oh, man, you really are a math geek. When they use this term volatility on the street and in these high-powered investor circles, they're talking about something that is a much more visceral animal than anything that I'm showing you here that we teach in class. Does that mean that I would love to have you learn about volatility? No. These people are insane. They are absolutely crazy. They throw money in. They're going after anything that is insanely, wildly volatile. Because they say volatility is where you make your money. You don't make your money off doing these things carefully.
So I full disclosure, I have to tell you, this is how they do it out there, the crazy. I mean, if you're talking about mutual fund managers, if you're talking about people who are responsible wealth planners, they get scared when they hear these people talking like this, because we try to do things more scientifically, more by the numbers. We leave this world of volatility to those money jockeys that are playing in the background in the international currencies and all of that. But anyway, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.